Thank you, everyone, for listening to Mapping the Zone. This is a podcast where we normally sit down for a significant quantity of minutes to talk about a very small chunk of a 1,000-page book. That is a behavior that we will continue to do for quite some time. But against what is probably... It's not the only thing that we read is the point that I'm trying to make, and the bit that I was going to do wasn't going to work. So we read a lot of other stuff on top of Pynchon. It's not the only thing that we read at any given time. All of us are very sort of active bibliophiles in our own personal life. And so in the spirit of this being towards the end of the year, we thought it would be a good idea to let you guys know what some books were that we really liked this year. This is not a top reads of 2025 in the sense that these are books that came out this year. None of the books... Nope, that's a lie. One of the books on my list did come out this year.
One of them mine did too.
But a majority of this is going to be just sort of the books that we read that were really impactful or that we really, really liked this year. So the idea here is just kind of go through sort of up to 10 and just kind of give a little bit of detail on what we liked about them. Just for all of you at home, if you're looking for some good stuff to read. Does anyone feel particularly compelled to go first?
So should I do 10 to 1 or 1 to 10?
However you want to do it, man.
We'll do 10 to 1. So the 10th for me is The Jewel-Hinged Jaw by Samuel R. Delaney. It's a book of nonfiction about sci-fi written in the 70s that introduced me to at least one of the authors and story and books that are to come on my list. It's just really well done, really interesting. Delaney is incredibly smart, or he comes across as such in that book. The 9th best was The Adventures of Alex by Joanna Russ. It's kind of sword and sorcery. I believe there's 5 stories. I read them in the Library of America edition, so it had an additional story on top of the usual like 4 or 5. There might have been one additional one. But it's about a female warrior named Alex. And it's very like it subverts tropes and stuff like that in a very interesting way. And it's just kind of fun to read. It's like a literary and like postmodern Xena kind of thing, which is an oversimplification, but whatever. 8th is Crypt of the Moon Spider by Nathan Ballengrud. I really like Ballengrud as an author. I don't really want to talk about that one too much. It's short, and the less said about it, the better before you read it. But I just really
enjoy
it.
That one's been on my radar for a while, so I'm glad to see that you liked it a lot. I'm going to have to find it.
Yeah, it features some of the most like memorable scenes of like kind of like cosmic body horror type stuff that I've ever come across. And it's short, like I said, so it's not a big commitment. 7th is Feral Architectures, Ballardian Horrors, edited by Sam Richards. It's a anthology of 5 Ballardian, as in J.G. Ballard-esque stories. It was put out by Weird Punk Books, which is, I believe, run by Sam Richards, which they're quickly becoming my favorite indie press. I've bought a good amount of their books. Not that many, but a few of their books already. But it's some of the best short stories I've come across this year, and I really love J.G. Ballard. I collect J.G. Ballard. I have a copy of everything but one of his, like, most expensive chapbooks. I have at least one copy, maybe not a first edition, but at least one copy of everything by him. Anyway, 6th is Malarkoy by Alex Phoebe. I don't know, the highs in Malarkoy are definitely higher than in Mordu for me. The lows might be lower as well. But it's just like, I mean, it goes places and it does things, and it's just relentlessly interesting. I will say that it gets significantly more interesting the deeper into it you go. Where I wasn't 100% sold on if I was going to have to, like, the first about 100, 200 pages, if the rest of the book had been exactly like those beginning, I wouldn't have enjoyed it nearly as much, but it kind of gathers momentum and goes on unexpected places. Fifth on my list is Last Days by Bryan Evanson. I wish I'd gone into this blind. I don't really want to spoil it. It's kind of like if Samuel Beckett wrote an action movie, in my opinion. And it features, like, I think it would make a really good movie. It would have to feature a lot of gore, which I don't think would, because of the type of movie it is, I don't think that would really go over well with Hollywood. But it is just really, it's just very high quality, like, horror, action, thriller type thing. And Evanston's just really fun in general. I haven't read a bad story by the guy. And I've read a few of his story collections and stuff. Fourth is The Lathe of Heaven by Ursula K. Le Guin. That was a reread. I think I've read that three times now in the last like 3 or 4 years since I first read it. I have a few different copies of it. I've been really interested in like dream machine stories and stories that explore dreams narratively, or where dreams are a central part of the narrative, help drive the narrative forwards. And that's an example of it. It is kind of her. It's kind of her. Her only clear homage to Philip K. Dick, who she went to high school with, but they didn't know each other. I guess, but they later would develop a friendship. But it's very Philip K. Dick esque. Third on my list is Ice by Anna Kavan. It is also quite dreamlike. It's kind of. It's a weird mixture of like classic and cult classic, I would say, where like you can come across people talking about it on Reddit a good amount. It's had a bit of a revival in the last few years because I believe Kavan has had a few of her books kind of put back in print. And they've had multiple printings and stuff. Yeah, it's kind of about this guy like pursuing this vaguely mystical, like almost not physical embodiment of like a girl playing to him, playing hard to get, and she's just disinterested, or you know, I don't, it's a very like kind of extreme situationship in some ways. It's very dreamlike, it's very fun while also being like haunting and troubling, and yeah, I just really loved it. Second is Played as It Lays by Joan Didion, which is also a reread. To be succinct, I believe that it's just my favorite, probably one of the best depictions of depression in anhedonia that I've read ever. It's probably the best. That and probably maybe Notes from Underground by Dostoevsky. Yeah. And first is Fourth Mansions by R.A. Lafferty. I did do a blog post about Lafferty a few months ago, and I recently watched a YouTube video about R.A. Lafferty that explores the fact that this is only recently, and actually since, sadly, it's since making this list. Apparently, Lafferty was a Holocaust denier, which you can only know if you've been to his archives and read his letters. That's apparently... there, if you, that information is there if you really want to look for it, which, you know, I don't know, is not great in a lot of ways, obviously pretty horrible in a lot of ways. That being said, Fourth Mansions, I really love the book. I read it, I finished it like a little bit after midnight on New Year's Eve, New Year's Day last year, like, while the fireworks were going off. I was just sitting there reading Fourth Mansions. It has Pynchon's like manic energy in a lot of ways, where the plot moves really quickly. Features a lot of weird, interesting characters with odd names. Fourth Mansion is there's conspiracies within conspiracies in that book. It's dreamlike. I just really loved it. I just felt like I'd be remiss if I gave it number one without mentioning the fact that I'd recently found that out. Quickly with my honorable mentions, in no order, The Ballad of Beta 2 by Delaney, Blood Heat by Ian Sinclair, Mordew by Phoebe, The Invention of Morel by Adolfo Bioy Saris, and the Elric series by Michael Moorcock.
Nice.
Sorry if that was long-winded.
No, that's some of these I've been meaning to read, like Ice by Anikovan. I've had on my radar for forever. I've read a few of the Elric books that Michael Moorcock did. I need to read more of them. Definitely some interesting dark kind of fantasy stuff that he does. I'll go ahead and knock mine out now. I'll do mine in what I loosely put together as a top 10, I guess. So number 10 for me would be So Many Doors by Oakley Hall. I think most people are familiar with him just from Warlock and obviously the influence it had on Pynchon. But I don't know how many people have read anything outside of that one. But I would highly recommend So Many Doors. It is a bleak, very noir kind of book. It has a lot. It feels like if Steinbeck wrote a more of a noir style. It is very rural in its setting, but it possesses a bleakness that it hit me pretty hard emotionally getting through that book. But it's really, really good. It's very well written. It's just a very hard book to get through. Next up is Strega by Johan Lykke Holm. This is a book that was about a group of women who gathered together at a kind of a convent. And then they have a disappearance within the group, and they sort of have to figure out what was going on and what happened to this person, why they disappeared, where'd they go. It was one that I think my wife picked it up at the library and just brought it over and was like, this seems like it's your vibe. And she was right, as she usually is. She's really good at finding books for me. The next one is another one that she picked for me. It is called Black Punk Now. It was edited by Chris Terry and James Spooner. This was a collection of essays, short stories, comics, and a couple of little like zines that were stuck in there, all from black artists and people in the punk scene. I made a whole playlist of music that I got into through this book. Bands that I was kind of already familiar with, like Death. Obviously, Bad Brains comes into play a little bit, but there was a ton more bands that I just had never heard of that I ended up just really getting into for a pretty good chunk of time. And not every part of that book is fantastic, but the parts that are really good and really gripping. And it just does a really good job of exploring a sort of lost era of punk music that didn't really ever get the dues that it deserved, and still thrives despite its kind of lack of presence in the community. Next is Drood by Dan Simmons. I've read Hyperion a long, long time ago. I need to reread that one, but I haven't read anything else by Dan Simmons until this one, and it is a really, really tense and gripping novel about the relationship between Charles Dickens and one of his writing partners. His name slips my mind right now because it's almost 10:30 where I am and my brain is melting. But it explores their dynamic and the sort of competitive nature that they had between the two of them, the jealousy that existed between the other writer and Dickens and his success. But all the while, there is this mysterious sort of otherworldly character that infiltrates Dickens's life. It's all connected to a real-life train accident that Dickens was involved in that nearly killed him. And from there is where this connection to this other mysterious character named Drood is, who is in the book is said to inspire the mystery of Edwin Drood, which was Dickens' unfinished last novel. Very, very good book. I've heard Dan Simmons' other stuff, like The Terror, is supposed to be really good. I have that one. I need to get around to reading it. But I had a great time with that book. Didn't want to put it down. Next up is Girls Against God. This was one that Kate recommended. to me. Very, very dreamy, atmospheric sort of writing, especially the back half of that book. Gets really...
real strange.
Real strange in a really good way, though. In a really good way. I think, if I remember correctly, you pitched it to me as a book about girls getting into Norwegian black metal.
I believe that is correct.
Relationship to it, and that is definitely the first half of that book. But there's a lot more that goes on in there. It's a really interesting exploration of these characters, and like I said, the back half of it I think might have been one of the best things I read all year. It's just really surreal and weird, very much like Solenoid or a Lynch film. Just has that dark, creepy ass vibe that I love. Next is Tender is the Flesh by Agustina Basterica. This one had been on my radar for a while. It had been on my bookshelf for a while, and I just, for whatever reason, didn't get around to it until this year. And it fucking it wrecked me in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
It's when you figure out what that book is doing, it is astonishing and disturbing. There is a scene in that book that might be one of the most disturbing things I've ever read in my life. And it occasionally...
when he goes back to the butcher shop?
Yeah, that occasionally just like will pop into my mind and I'm like, oh boy. Oh, that's rough. But it is a phenomenally written book. I have her newer book. I can't remember the name of it right now because I have all my books packed up. Yes. So I'm planning on reading that. Might actually be the next book I read once we get all unpacked at the house.
If you do, I need to hear what you think of it because I still haven't been able to make heads or tails of it. And I read it when it came out in like March.
Okay. Yeah, I'll keep you updated. Next on my list is maybe the author I have read the most of this year. This was Imagica by Clive Barker. I only recently got into his fiction within the last couple of years. I picked up Weave World a few years back and read that and really liked it. I read The Great and Secret Show. I read why can't I think of the name of the book that Hellraiser came from? I read that one. That was good. Everything I've read by him has been good. The Books of Blood collection that I have had some really cool stories in it. Imagica, holy hell, just hit on a completely different level. I remember when I got The Great and Secret Show, it called it on the back. I think it was the New York Times referred to it as a mix between Gravity's Rainbow and Lord of the Rings, which is a huge selling point for me because I was like, I don't know how you can combine those two books, but I'm game. It's not a combination of those two, but Imagica gets pretty close. Imagica is the level of world building that he does in that book by itself is astonishing. The characters are beautifully fleshed out. The story itself, the pacing is phenomenal. It never really feels like it hits a misstep at any point along the way. And it's like an 800 page book. But it was one that had me gripped from pretty much page one. And, I am looking forward to getting back to just going back and rereading that, 'cause I had such a fun time with it. Number three on my list is Timequake by Kurt Vonnegut. I think anybody who listens to this show at this point knows how much of a Kurt Vonnegut fan I am.
No.
I know, right? Shocking. Timequake is one that I don't understand how I never got around to reading. It is the last of the fiction novels that he wrote, and I think it just kind of gets missed by a lot of people because it's not one of the big ones that he's done. But it is... it reads like a greatest hits, and I think that's very intentional. And the whole thing is kind of almost his... he has written himself into the story as a character and is kind of tracing back through his own novels and exploring the connections between all of them. So if you're familiar with Vonnegut and how interconnected a lot of his work is, it makes this one a lot better. So for anyone who's just kind of skimmed the surface of Vonnegut's bibliography. I would hold off on this one until you've read a good chunk of it, because it'll hit a lot harder when you do. It's very bittersweet in that way, too, because this is an author who knows he's at the end and is fully aware of that and is kind of just trying to tie together everything that he's done in his life. And anyone who knows Vonnegut knows he's very good at black humor and making jokes out of really depressing subject matter. And he does a lot of that in Timequake, and it's really good, but it's also just kind of really hard to get through knowing what he was going through, you know, his mindset at the time he was writing it. Number two for me is The Buffalo Hunter Hunter by Stephen Graham Jones. I've had the pleasure of meeting this guy, like, I think 5 times now, and getting to chat with him at various book events that he does. And I think this is the first book since The Only Good Indians that he's gotten a lot of attention for, and rightly so. This book was phenomenal. It is, on the surface, it's a sort of vampire novel set in the late 1800s, but it is also playing with that genre in a lot of ways. And the main character is, I don't remember what tribe he is from, but basically he becomes infected, or what, you know, whatever you want to use the term for. He becomes a vampire like creature who he gets compelled to feed on his own people, but he doesn't want to, because then he becomes the oppressor that he's been trying to fight the whole time. So he's following around this other character who's sort of making it his life's goal to clear out the natives in the area. And it's written in a very interesting way. There's a narrative that flows through, but then there's also an epistolary side where it's diary entries from the main character. So it's interesting in seeing how these two sort of worldviews are sort of coming together at the same time, and you can kind of see where things are going to go, but you can't at the same time, because they're slowly starting to line up, but they're keeping themselves far enough apart that they don't. Stephen Graham Jones is easily one of my favorite writers of the last few years. For anyone who loves horror, he is at the top, I think. The dude puts out an insane amount of work too. He publishes he's basically the Stephen King for a new generation, I guess, in his output, but I have yet to be disappointed by anything he's done. If you like this one, check out his other stuff. If you like his other stuff, check out this one. Either way, I think this was a phenomenal read. And the only thing I read better than that this year was Water Black by Alex Phoebe. Hopefully you guys have all, I see you guys, the people listening have listened to the show we did with Alex Phoebe. It was an incredible time to get him on the show and talk to him. I was very excited about that one. I felt like each of the novels in this trilogy, starting with Mordu and then Malarkoi and then Water Black, got better and better and better. The first half of Water Black is almost a separate story, but it will tie into the main narrative through everything else later on in the back half of the book. But the first half of that book is one of the best things I have read in a very, very, very long time. It is a beautiful story. Characters are well done, and it feels like a mashup of so many different stories and so many different genres in the same time. But it never feels like it's ripping off any of them. It's a phenomenal conclusion to that trilogy. I can't say enough about it, but it's hard to talk about it without talking about the first two in that series. So, I'm just going to kind of leave it at that. And I look forward to whatever he does next, because he has also become one of my favorite authors, in recent years. So that is my top of 2025.
my top list. Department of Speculation by Jenny Offal is number 10. This is a book that had been on my list to get to for a while, and is a really interesting sort of dreamlike sentence fragment narrative of like a woman going through upheaval in her marriage because she discovers that her husband is cheating on her. It's really, really sparse prose that is really effective. You can read it in an afternoon, but the emotional impact of it sticks with you for a very, very long time after that. I read it once and then I immediately just like started over at the beginning and I read it again. There's one particular line in it that I love where the narrator says something akin to the fact that she got herself a new jacket and you put your hands in all the pockets. Which is just, it's just such a simple, evocative phrase that's really stuck with me for a long time after reading it. And it's filled with a lot of things like that. There's also some great humor in the book as well in certain moments. It offers a lot with very little in terms of the actual amount of words on the page. It's excellent. I bought her book Weather after that, which I plan to read probably in 2026. After that, it'd be 100 Years of Solitude by Gabriel Garcia Marquez. It's a book that has not really been on my radar to get to. It's one of those ones that is obviously a classic and is well regarded for a lot of reasons. But I just decided sort of on a whim to read it after I had read The White Album by Joan Didion. And she has an essay in that collection where she goes to Bogota in Colombia, and she is quoting from 100 Years of Solitude throughout the essay. And just the first line of the book, which she includes, made me immediately go out and get it after reading it from my local library, and just really fell into it really, really easily. And it's the closest thing that I can think of to biblical literature that I have encountered since leaving seminary. In anything that I've read, and nothing else that I have read before or since has really come close to replicating the feeling that book has. It's really, really unique in that regard. Next would be Cartoons by Kit Schluter. Kit Schluter is a cartoonist and a poet and a translator. But he is also now a short fiction writer. I don't remember what year Cartoons came out, but it is his just sort of short fiction debut. Prior to that, he had published some poetry, and he had done a lot of translation work in particular. This is out on City Lights Press out of San Francisco, and is just a collection of sort of surrealist short stories where he is kind of using the trappings of the New Weird movement, but in sort of micro snippets. And some of them, you know, I can't necessarily make heads or tails of what he's trying to say on like a grander scale, but there are some in that collection that have stuck with me ever since. There's a particular story in Cartoons where it's written from the perspective of a girl who's made out of paper. And the relationship that she has to her family and to the great love of her life, who is an eraser. And it's just really, really, really effective. And it captures a feeling that I and a lot of my friends have had, like, through our girlhood. And I am surprised that it came from a man, to put it simply. It's really, really good. And the longest story in the book is a monologue from the perspective of an umbrella. And I loved that. It's really quite a fun style of writing, a fun sense of humor. And it really has a lot of meaning underneath the surface that is easy to feel, but not always easy to uncover. And I really enjoyed the process of doing so. My next book is called How to Abandon Ship by Sasha West. This is actually a poetry collection. Cody, I actually bought this with you at Book Woman in Austin.
Yes, I remember that.
Yeah. Sasha West is a professor of poetry at the University of Texas, and this is her second collection of poetry, I believe. It is a collection of sort of musings and thoughts and anxieties that she had after having a child. So it's a series of poems that she put together where she is stylizing herself as like a 21st century version of the prophet Cassandra, where she is writing kind of warnings or prophecies that are destined to be ignored. And there is some stuff in How to Abandon Ship that just knocked me over. A lot of her anxieties over having a kid is related to the climate and related to like the political situation of the world and kind of what she's bringing a new life into. And there are poems in How to Abandon Ship that are written from the perspective of greenhouse gases or carbon dioxide that is like actively leaching through the atmosphere. There are poems that deal with the perspective of like plastic and trash, and they are really, really effective. And mixed in between these other poems, she has like one continuous long poem that she's breaking up that's just called Cassandra over and over again. And every time it goes back to that Cassandra voice throughout the sort of narrative of the collection, it's really, really impressive. I read it in an evening, and then I read it again the next day, and there is a feeling imparted by a lot of that collection that is really unlike any other poetry that I've read. I highly recommend it. My next book is The White Album by Joan Didion. Joan's great. Everything she wrote was great. She never failed in anything she wrote. The White Album is a collection of sort of musings and thoughts on the 60s that she published after the 60s were over. So it's kind of a spiritual successor to Slouching Towards Bethlehem. Some of the most complicated, nuanced takes on American life still to this day come out of that collection, in my opinion. Her piece on the new governor's mansion in California after Ronald Reagan came into office is front to back incredible, and just has a lot of thoughts about modern life that I think have become more relevant even now. It also has my favorite appearance by The Doors in anything. She got a chance to meet them, and the way that she depicts being in the same room as Jim Morrison and the rest of The Doors is really, really funny. And feels very accurate spiritually to how it must have been like to be around them. My next book after that is The Yiddish Policeman's Union by Michael Chabon. This book was one that I wanted to read for a really long time, but I kept putting off because I kept hearing that it was not very good and that it was like almost a lesser entry in Chabon's catalog. I think the fact that it came out after Cavalier and Clay probably didn't do him any favors in terms of the book's view in sort of the public eye and in the average reader. But I think Yiddish Policeman's Union is amazing. The world building in it feels effortless, but it is also a book that has in the, I don't know, probably 14 years since it came out. Actually, probably 15 years since it came out, become even more relevant in its depiction of the difficulties of a Jewish state. And the things that come along with that, there are things that he is using that book to comment on that are still relevant and have become even more so in 2025. And ultimately, his interpretation of the Jewish people comes down to the idea that rather than focusing on having a homeland, there is a certain beauty in the way that the Jewish people interact with one another. That what it really comes down to is rather than in being tied to a specific tract of land, they should be tied to one another and the relationships that form between Jews wherever they may be. And it's a perspective that I have not heard articulated, even as a Jewish person, by any sort of major outlet or other book that I've read. And on top of that, it's just like a really fun noir. He definitely sort of effortlessly moves into that pastiche, and it's sort of like if a book was written by Pynchon, Raymond Chandler, and Nabokov is really how the prose in that book comes across. and I absolutely devoured it. Definitely a book that would have given me a huge hangover if I hadn't finished reading it on a train, and then I had nothing else to do but read a different book immediately afterwards. My next book after that is Mordu by Alex Phoebe. If you want to hear my extended thoughts on Mordu, we did an interview with Alex that is really good, just from a standpoint of getting to hear him talk about those books. And you're also able to hear sort of my interpretation of them, or of things that I found particularly interesting. Just a really, really innovative fantasy series that is unlike anything else that I have read, and that is really deeply philosophical at its core in a way that a lot of fantasy tries to do, but doesn't exactly succeed in a way that I think Alex does succeed in doing. Then I have The Library of Babel by Jorge Luis Borges. This is just a compilation of short stories of his. Penguin did a series of like small cloth-bound books, and they did one for Borges with just like a list of these kind of random stories that they pulled from a number of his other collections. I had not read any Borges before this, and it was a mistake to wait that long, is the way that I would put it, because it is unlike anything else that I had ever read. I was reading it at the same time that I had just read The Stranger, and I had read some lectures by Jean-Paul Sartre, and so the existentialist elements of his writing really stuck out in a way that I think really enhanced my reading of it. And just the labyrinthian way in which he can construct a story with different layers of meaning and interpretation in such a short space of pages is really, really impressive. There's nothing I can say about his writing that hasn't been said before. Everyone who tells you how good it is absolutely correct. I immediately went out and bought his collected fiction volume after finishing it. So I look forward to reading the rest of his short stories probably in the new year. I accidentally skipped over Flat Earth by Annika Jade Levy. This is the book that I read that came out this year that ended up on my list. I will probably end up doing a bonus episode on this in the future, so I'm going to save most of my thoughts on it. But it is a remarkable look at what it is like to be a young person in society these days, and the difficulties in trying to self-actualize when the only things that you are presented with are mimetic desire, and that's it. And how there's something inherently flawed in trying to create a life for yourself in your early to mid-20s when all of the desires you have come from other people and other places and are inspired by pre-existing things. It's an excellent novel that I am still thinking about after finishing it, you know, almost a week ago, probably, because of the sort of complicated nature at the heart of it, especially within the protagonist. And I'm very excited to read what else Annika Jade Levy writes. And then lastly, I have Void Corporation by Blake Butler. Blake, if there's a chance you listen to this podcast, I'd love to talk to you. I meant to see if I could find this person's email address or some way to get in touch with him, but never did. I would love to get him on the podcast. I am not able to talk about this book without talking for a very long time. It is one that I will definitely be doing something on in the future for the podcast, probably a bonus episode or just, you know, I don't know, me rambling into a microphone for an hour and then just posting it on the RSS feed. Because it's unlike anything that I've read. Reading it is unlike anything that I've read. It maybe has an ending to rival Gravity's Rainbow as far as how the novel pans away from its subject to the reader and the feeling and questions that it imparts to you as you are reading. And the way in which it shifts and the way he plays with language is really, really something else. I won't say anything else other than maybe a brief plot synopsis, which is that one day a video is posted to the internet that goes viral of masked men burning a painting. And then a series of these videos are posted after that, and they begin to affect society. And the woman who the paintings were stolen from becomes a central figure of interest in what is going on. It's a book about the internet. It's a book about virality and viruses. It's a book about aging and dying. It's a book about a lot of things, but it is an incredible read. And ended up not just on my top 10 of the year, but also my top 10 of all time. So really, really excellent. Went out and bought another of his books immediately afterwards that I can't wait to dig into probably next year as well. So yeah, this is a particularly really good year of reading for me.
All right, I guess that leaves me. And I'll make it short. Thankfully, for the sake of our recording session, my brain is incapable of ranking things or giving me a list longer than one or two objects. So during this very long recording session, I've been slowly filling out what I guess I'll call honorable mentions, because for those of you not in this recording, this has been a year where I have just slowly added more and more absurdly long books to my currently reading list. And I have finished a few of them, and the amount of time I've spent on any given book has not correlated all that much with how much I've thought about it. So these are just five of the books that I've thought the most about, and I haven't even finished a couple of them. So I'll start with the one that I finished the most. I guess that would be Near to the Wild Heart by Clarice Lispector. Translated by Alison Entrekin. I don't know how to pronounce her name. Entrekin. Which is, if you haven't read Lispector before, and I had not, I get the impression this is one of her worst texts, just based on how people talk about it. But I've got to say, it's one of the only Kunstlerroman, you know, birth of an artist kind of books that I've read that I actually didn't find utterly navel-gazy and more of a waste of time than anything else. I came away from it thinking, wow, this is an author who knew how to write things that I have never heard phrased before. And as a result, even though I read that book way back in like January or February, I've just been looking forward to picking up another one of her books ever since. So that'll have to happen sometime this next year. The next book that I have most finished is Ceremony by Leslie Marmon Silko, which neither of these two books are long. Ceremony is just kind of a story of a man, a mixed-race man, grew up on a pueblo and was drafted in World War II and comes back and is haunted by PTSD, not to mention the horrors, the everyday horrors of his life as someone who doesn't quite fit into either a world that everyone around him is mourning or the world that is causing the mourning of everyone around him. And it's one of those books that is remarkably dense, but also remarkably clear to read, and just heartbreaking and life-affirming, and an excellent, excellent book for anyone going through a tough time or not. Now let's get on to the things that I have read less of. This one, I've read all of it, but not sure how valuable that is. And this is Difference in Repetition by Gilles Deleuze, which is nonfiction, not even really creative nonfiction, although I will highly recommend reading it just as poetry. It's, if you go into it with a familiarity with, you know, early Enlightenment philosophy, everyone from Kant to Hegel to Leibniz to whoever else, you'll get a lot out of it in the philosophical realm. If you don't care about that, it's a real work of art, I'll say. Next, on to the unfinished works. The one that I finished more of is La Medusa by Vanessa Place. And this is a book which is published by, I believe, Vanessa Place's own publishing house. And it is one of the only books that I'm aware of published in the past 20 years that is maintaining the same kind of ambitious experimentation that people like Pynchon are known for. And La Medusa is kind of indescribable. The chapters are structured around parts of the brain. Almost every storyline is delivered through the stream of consciousness of a character or an object or a city street, or just kind of the broken antenna of a television aerial picking up whatever's going through, presumably Los Angeles. It's gross, both in the sense of largesse, but also it is bodily, both in the gruesome and the sexual. And it's got a Place has a real ear. You know, it turns out that a professional poet can do some poetry, and the whole book is written in a diverse set of lexicons and viewpoints, and it's just given me a lot to think about, even though I still haven't gotten through the last 100 pages or so. And finally, the book I have read the least, but I've thought about the most by far, is Miss Macintosh, My Darling, by Marguerite Young, which is a nice big book that feels like it's going nowhere because it's just a woman's on a bus, and that is the book. And you get to sit with this woman on the bus, and it is in the 500 pages or so that I have read so far, it is the book that I have wrestled with the most out of anything in years, and has delivered me quite a few moments of strong, bracing clarity with regard to myself, the world around me, and fiction in general. So those are my recommendations from this year.
Well, thank you, everyone. This has been a fun idea. We'll probably continue to do these going forward. If you pick up any of the books that we recommend and read them, we'd love to hear from you. I know that that all of us would certainly like to spread the word of good reading, and would hope to hear how it impacts other people. So hopefully you've gotten some good inspiration for what you might want to read going into next year. And we hope that you find something nice to read, and let us know if you enjoyed any of our recommendations. I'm repeating myself over and over again. So we're going to go ahead and wrap up there. Thank you, everyone, for listening. We'll be back with our regularly scheduled content very shortly.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.